What challenges do you face in your day-to-day experience? For people with autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, or other kinds of brain differences, their neurodiversity means that much of the world wasn't designed for them. It also means that they're facing all kinds of challenges that those of us who are neurotypical don't experience anywhere near to the same extent. I'm Michael Plater-Finley, and this is the Better with Purpose podcast. This show is about people who have built their work around purpose, people committed to making a positive impact on the world through their endeavors. I invite my guests to share their stories, their journey to finding purpose, what that purpose means to them, how it fuels their work, and how others can find that same kind of meaning and drive for themselves. My hope is that these stories will inspire you to seek out your own purpose in work. In this episode of Better with Purpose, I interview Wanda Deschamps, founder of Liberty Co., a consultancy focused on increasing the participation level of the neurodiverse population in the workforce. As a parent to a neurodiverse child, Wanda's work as an advocate brings me great hope for the future. I've also admired Wanda's commitment to inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility in general. She's a vocal proponent of equity in Canada and brings light to challenging and necessary issues that we need to address to move forward as a more just and inclusive society. Thank you for joining me, Wanda.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Could I ask you to tell us about what your purpose-driven endeavor is?
Liberty Co. seeks to increase the participation level of the neurodiverse population in the workforce, with a special emphasis on autism due to my own diagnosis at midlife. So it's a consultancy that's working with organizations in this area. And there's also a Women for Women division that's focused on women positivity, women focus, women support. And that is to help us move towards a gender equal Canada and world. So my purposes, there's a number, however, for the sake of this conversation, neurodiversity and gender equity.
So both of those things are important to me as well. And that's one of the reasons why I reached out to you to invite you to have a conversation with me on this show. I've been observing your advocacy and the sorts of things that you get involved in supporting neurodivergent people. And that's meaningful to me as a parent to a neurodivergent child and learning a lot about the challenges that neurodivergent people face in all facets of life. But I think if I interpret it right, you're looking more through the lens of supporting people in work. Is that right?
It's a particular passion of mine because I received my own diagnosis and it followed the diagnosis of our sons. And during the time following that, I opened Liberty Co. I moved into entrepreneurship. And actually, the first iteration of Liberty Co. was not focused on neurodiversity. My background is the charitable sector. So I opened Liberty Co. thinking it would service the charitable sector. And then what happened was, the more I read, particularly about the experiences of women with autism, and the more I understood about employment realities for people with autism, I thought, Wanda, this is your purpose. The majority of the neurodiverse population is either unemployed or underemployed, and that is definitely true of people with autism. And although I've struggled in the workplace, I've generally been in the minority, that I've been gainfully employed my entire career. And so I really thought that I should use my privilege as a platform to help create smoother employment pathways for others.
The interpretation I have of that, it's not that the intention is to make it easy, because that's maybe not possible, but taking into account the context of making it easier. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Practically speaking, I'm one person. So I want to be realistic in terms of how much I can accomplish. I want to be realistic in terms of how far we have to go. So looking at the majority of the autism population, unemployed or underemployed, the majority of the neurodiverse population, frankly, the majority of the disability population, this is not going to be overnight change. So I have gotten involved in projects and with organizations where I feel I can make a difference. And I mentioned to you just a few minutes ago, one of the reasons I feel I can make a difference is because of my privilege. Because of my privilege, I have a platform. So I use that platform to enter organizations, to share information, to really help change thinking about the talents that the neurodiverse population has and that they're going untapped. So it's about being positive and being ambitious in the sense that let's do as much as we can. However, I do need to be realistic. It's really interesting. Change is being brought forward in our workplaces now at a pace that I could not have imagined. When I started out on this and I was planning on reorienting Liberty Co., that was pre-COVID. That was pre-George Floyd. And that was pre-finding unmarked graves and remains of residential school children. We're seeing an acceleration in our workplaces already around the need for inclusivity. And of course, I would never, ever, ever ask for these horrific things to be uncovered or to go viral. However, it is giving us a sense of urgency that I and others who have been working towards inclusion could not have advanced. I was advocating for greater inclusion and, you know, spotlighting inequities and inequalities and sexism, ableism, racism. However, like so many, a lot of people were in denial, but it's becoming more difficult now for people to be in denial. I am optimistic about disability employment, neurodiverse employment, autistic employment coming out of COVID.
The last 18 months feels to me like a period of change like none that I can think of in my lifetime. And what we've seen in the last 18 months, you know, has really made me question what role I've played and how I've helped other people and like you, how I can use my own platform to address issues around just equity for everyone. But it's, I think, really, to flip this to the positive perspective here, that it's a very exciting time that we've had this opportunity to rethink.
Yes. And I said that recently. I gave a keynote presentation at a recent conference about entrepreneurship as a viable pathway for autistics. And during the Q&A, I said, very similar to what I just said to you, of course, we would never wish for these horrific circumstances, these horrific events, these horrific revelations. On the positive, let's seize this opportunity and create inclusive workplaces for everyone.
There's so much more that an organization has to do to be inclusive. And now's the time for businesses to take that very seriously, because if they don't, the momentum that exists now and the focus on inclusion and belonging is paramount. And as the workforce, I think, ages, as younger people are entering into their careers, the demands will be greater for shedding the history of how we've approached doing work. And I mean that broadly, but also specifically with regard to different kinds of inclusion that need to be addressed.
That's so true. Age and the aging workforce is a huge factor. Even though we've seen attrition of women during COVID, overall, going back to pre-COVID, we were making huge gains in terms of women in the workforce and in terms of women in leadership positions, not in every sector by any stretch. However, overall, the situation of women was improving. Black community members, people of color, newcomers. These are all groups who are becoming more active in our post-secondary sector, for example. So these are all the people who we're going to be seeing represented more in the ranks, whether it's look at politics. The face of politics is changing. Even look at our federal leaders. It's changing. And whether it's the private sector, the public sector, communities, yes, we have to be ready. In fact, ideally, we're more than ready. We're anticipating all of this. And so, for example, that is a reason why there is a huge opportunity for the neurodiverse population, and within that, the autistic population. The needs of the workplace are changing. The workplaces are becoming more inclusive. They're becoming more diverse. And so organizations want different ways of thinking. And the neurodiverse population provides different ways of thinking. All members of non-dominant groups provide different ways of thinking. That's why diversity is so important. That is why when you look at reports like the McKinsey report, they indicate that organizations with a diverse base can outperform their peers. Because if you only have one group providing solutions or designing the future, you will likely come up with the same outcomes that you've come up with before. That does not make you competitive. That does not make you innovative. So that's why I don't separate. I focus. My foci is neurodiversity and gender equity. However, my work intersects. So whenever I present on neurodiversity, or whenever I present on gender equity, or whenever I do research in the area, I always delve in on intersectionality. And that's recognizing that no one is only one aspect of their identity. I'm a woman. I'm a woman with autism. I'm a Canadian citizen. I'm white. These are all aspects of my identity. And no one is just one aspect of their identity. And it's really important to consider when power structures come into play. So as a woman with autism, generally speaking, I face barriers that white women who are abled do not face. So these are all really important issues. They're coming to the fore. I'm really excited. I think that we could see a lot of change in a short period of time. You mentioned, you know, the past 18 months has been like nothing you've seen in your lifetime. Probably not like anything I've seen in my lifetime. Let's keep it going.
I too feel a sense of excitement. Maybe it's a case of confirmation bias, but I feel that the more people I speak with about bringing purpose into their work and into their lives, the more feedback I'm getting from people about how the experience of the pandemic has forced a rethinking of their assumptions about how their lives were going to go, and has really helped people to identify what's important to them, to really have a sort of a values reassessment. In some cases, I think there will be people who will just be so anxious to get back to whatever status quo was that the comfort that they seek of life as they knew it before will be more important to them than doing things differently. But the feedback I'm getting as I speak to more and more people is that they don't want to do just what they were doing before, and they want to be living lives that have meaning and addressing personal issues in terms of how they've been living their lives and what's been important to them and how they spend their time, but also looking at these bigger challenges that we're facing, climate change, addressing, you know, systemic racism, trying to do something about the inequalities that exist in our society generally. These things are more in the fore, I feel, for people. I hope that as awful as the stressors have been leading up to this time in our history, that we use this as a jumping off point to make the kinds of transformations that are necessary for a big improvement of well-being for everyone across the board.
It's really well said.
Well, thank you. Coming back to how purpose works for you and in the work that you do, that decision to strike out as an entrepreneur, was there a particular moment of you know, something happening, some sort of event that brought you to that?
I was fired from my position, and I could have applied for new positions in the charitable sector. That was my background for 25 years, and I could have started a search for a new position, applied for various jobs within the sector. However, because of the sexism and because of the ableism, with an emphasis on the ableism that I had experienced, I said, "Wanda, why don't you look at going out on your own?" And I didn't make this decision just on my own. I did what I always do when I'm considering options, and that is I reached out to my network. And the feedback that I was getting was, why don't you try going out on your own? And it's not just something that emerged after I was fired in 2018. People had mentioned to me before over the years, you know, would you ever consider going out on your own? I think they always did view it in the context of charitable sector, providing services to that sector, because that was my background. And so, Michael, it's really interesting. I don't think I've told this story. I was fired September 11th, 2018, and was making decisions. And we went to Nova Scotia, where we're from, for a wedding, Thanksgiving weekend. And I came back, and the next day I was attending an event about women and entrepreneurship and innovation. And I had to submit my registration information. So I submitted it as founder and principal of Liberty Co. And people asked me what I did. And I said, I had my own firm. And they asked me how long I had it. And I said, since today. And that was it. And as I mentioned, I did establish it to provide services to the charitable sector. However, for a number of reasons, including that I started to get in touch with my own diagnosis, which happened in 2017, started to read more about the experiences, as I mentioned to you, particularly of women with autism, started to make connections with more organizations, and really, Michael, starting to notice something that you and I just touched on, and that is the push for organizations to be more inclusive. So I actually started seeing for the first time in my newsfeed, for example, autism hiring program, IBM, Microsoft, disability employment. I was going through this huge change and evolving, and it was like the world was changing too. And I knew that, and I've written about this and I've spoken about it, that I had changed and changed and changed my whole life, especially in the workplace. I had modified, I had adapted, I had shifted, I had received coaching, executive coaching, I had attended training, workshops, 360s, you name it. And I had changed and changed and changed and changed and changed. And it just got to the point that I couldn't continue to do that. And frankly, why should Wanda have to fundamentally change Wanda? When's everyone else changing? And I had noticed the racism. I had noticed that the people who were particularly judgmental of me were white. I had noticed that there weren't people with disabilities in the workforce generally at a really high rate. I noticed that Canadian citizens with privilege were harsher. They weren't as open-minded. They weren't thinking about the same issues that I was. Indigenous reconciliation, inclusive leadership, women in academia. Where are they? Where are the women of color in academia and the higher ranking positions? You ask, was there a moment? Yes, there was a moment. And then Liberty Co. reoriented pre-pandemic. But I announced it officially during the pandemic, but the wheels were in motion. It was clear, Wanda, you need to move in this direction. I haven't looked back.
When you got your diagnosis, did it provide you with an opportunity to see how your experience prior to your diagnosis was? I would imagine there was a lot of recontextualizing of your experience through your career.
Absolutely. So how I can describe it is that I looked at everything through a new prism, not only professionally, definitely professionally, however, not limited to work. You know, I certainly re-examined personal experiences, relationships, all kinds of things, but it was really, really helpful However, I did not coin this term. The diagnosis is not the end. It's really only the beginning. So through this reexamination, I realized so many things. I realized I made my share of mistakes, and it didn't take me to my diagnosis to know that I had made my share of mistakes. I wouldn't have been constantly changing, as I just mentioned to you, if I wasn't really attuned to my need to modify my behavior and rethink my approaches. However, as I also just mentioned to you, it's impossible for the onus to only be on one person. We need everyone to be more inclusive if we're truly going to have inclusive, diverse, equitable, and accessible workplaces and greater society. I just want to add one more thing. So something that was really, really helpful to me, and I'm sharing in case it's helpful to our listeners, is understanding the research perspective was incredibly helpful for me. As I launched Liberty Co., I was also learning more about autism and particularly women with autism. And I started making contact with researchers. And one in particular, Dr. Yanni Hamdani, has been a tremendously positive influence on me because she's able to talk from such an objective perspective about what we know regarding women with autism. And frankly, what we don't know, and there's more that we don't know than we do know. And Yanni doesn't even use the word know because she says researchers are hesitant to say that they know anything. It's always a matter of questioning, and it's always a matter of searching. But the research was really, really helpful. It made me realize that, and I know this may sound obvious, but I still needed to hear it, my differences were largely because I have a brain makeup that varies from the neurotypical population. So I was able to depersonalize, and I was able to understand more in an objective manner. And that was really, really helpful. So this is a continuous journey that I'm on every day. I don't want anyone to think it has stopped or that it will stop. However, the short answer to your question, did I rethink, did I reexamine, did I reevaluate? Yes. Do I continue to do so? Yes. And for anyone, it doesn't have to be autism, but any kind of significant diagnosis that they receive or news that they receive or an awareness, or you mentioned, you know, your own reflections over the past 18 months, there's lots of resources out there and no one has to feel that they're alone. Something that I've written about is that my diagnosis has made me so much more self-aware. It has made me so much more in touch with myself. So I'm more attuned to my strengths and my weaknesses, both inside and outside autism. And this has a snowball effect. I say self-awareness is the greatest gift you can give yourself because, for example, Michael, people treat me differently. So I talked about conflict in the workplace, and of course, I take full responsibility for conflict that I caused, misunderstandings. I do believe, absolutely, there is sexism and ableism at play. I also know that I was too direct at times. I was insensitive at times. All of that about me is true. However, if I was more aware and therefore more confident, if I had higher self-esteem, I believe that people would have treated me differently. I was targeted because I was vulnerable. And I noticed that people treated me differently than they treated neurotypicals. They didn't know, because I didn't know. Wanda has a different brain. You don't. However, this is what happens with vulnerable groups in the workplace. They are targeted. And I view myself very differently. I present very differently. I interact very differently. And I believe, just to restate, that if all of these things were in place when I was working, I would have had a different outcome. Maybe not entirely, because I was constrained. I was held back. I wanted to promote inequity, inequality, or I should say solutions to inequity and inequality. The charitable sector, ironically, was not there with me. The charitable sector, to a large degree, wanted to turn a blind eye, and still does in a lot of ways, to these inequities. When we're aware of our circumstances and we're able to share it, people understand. And they treat each other differently. And frankly, if I didn't understand, I'm not worth your time.
I look back on some of the interactions that I've had over the years with people I've worked with. I see how important it is to have that greater context of what might be going on for a person, and how easy it is to slip into what's commonly held as assumptions about, you know, say, autism or people with ADHD, and to dismiss people because they don't behave as neurotypicals do. Now, knowing how I've approached people who didn't behave as I expected, and I may have treated them in ways that might have been dismissive or not taking into account the range of things that might have been going on for them. And so knowing that now, and thinking about how I've worked with people in the past, professionally, but also personally, really has got me to think quite differently about how I approach people in my day-to-day. You know, I might have been inclined to, like I said earlier, dismiss somebody or maybe engage with them in a maybe more of a confrontational way, or be prone to conflict because of how I expected them to behave and how they behaved to me in response. Knowing what I know now, I'm able to reconsider my own responses. And that self-awareness for me has been very helpful.
So, Michael, what you're hitting on so well are all the aspects we need to put in place in our work environments if neurodiverse individuals are going to flourish and if they're going to thrive. So if people are going to come with their prejudgments, if people are going to come with their ideas that there's one approach, if people are going to go to worst case scenario because someone's different, even though you can't see their difference, but because they present differently than others, then it's not going to work. But it's not that it's not going to work only for neurodiverse. It's not going to work for individuals outside the dominant group. And so that's why when I present organizations or I work with organizations, I always highlight intersectionality, because there isn't anything that's good for the neurodiverse population that isn't good for everyone. And in fact, a corporate representative I met took it this far. She said, there's no such thing as accommodation for individual or one group. Any request for accommodation that comes forward has much, much wider benefit than one individual or the group it was initially designed for. And we see that everything from physical design, originally geared for baby carriages and for wheelchairs, and now have much wider benefit. In fact, I might put that in reverse, designed for wheelchairs, great for baby carriages, and much wider benefit. Closed captioning, designed for the hard of hearing community, benefit way beyond. All of these practices that are good for neurodiverse or another group, they're good for everyone. It's a matter of, are we going to truly seize this opportunity and bring forward more inclusive workplaces for everyone?
I feel very optimistic about the future, even though there's so many challenges for us to address. We've got this critical mass that just continues to pick up people, pick up speed, pick up attention. I think it's a really exciting time.
I agree. I think it is too.
If you were to be speaking to somebody who is interested in starting a purpose-driven endeavor right now, what advice might you offer them through your own experience and how that might help them with their purpose-driven endeavor?
Well, I would say that it's really important to be completely in sync with your purpose as an entrepreneur, because there's a lot of challenges. It's unpredictable. So I would say definitely be in touch with your purpose, and your purpose will guide you, and your purpose will energize you, and your purpose will motivate you. On the other hand, be realistic and pull in resources. I always say it's not one-stop shopping. Don't feel obligated to pull in the first program or support that you find, and continue to do that. So as you start up, you're going to pull in programs and resources. Continue to do that and keep returning to your purpose. So if you have a bad day, if you experience a disappointment, keep returning to your mission. You know, am I still in touch with my mission? Is my mission still my North Star? Then keep going. Don't allow one thing to set you back.
So one last question. Have you had any surprises in your entrepreneurship journey?
Michael, I'm surprised every day. I had no idea, Michael, when I reoriented, that there would be such a response. I've had the really good fortune that it's not as much things that I've worked on haven't taken off. It's that they've taken longer. The seeds have been planted longer than I thought before they took root. And so you do need to be patient. There's not a dull moment.
Thank you, Wanda, for sharing all this with me and for telling me about your journey, and for helping people to understand the importance of inclusion for so many people, in particular neurodivergent people and women. I'm so hopeful for the future for people with autism and other neurodivergent people because of the work that you're doing and people like you. And I'm grateful for the work that you do.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really meaningful to me. I'm really glad that we connected online, and I'm really grateful for this conversation, and I share in your hope and your optimism.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Wanda. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Better With Purpose. I enjoyed my conversation with Wanda, and I hope you did too. Visit betterwithpurpose.com for content related to ideas and topics that we talked about in this episode. My intention with this podcast is to feature a wide range of people who are working to make their lives and others better with purpose. If someone whose story about working with purpose has inspired you, please let me know. You can email me at michael@betterwithpurpose.com. If you liked the episode, please share it with a friend. For updates about the Better With Purpose podcast, sign up for the newsletter at betterwithpurpose.com. Thanks for listening.